This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Arrowhead Land Company. Here you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. What's going on, folks? Welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. My name is John Hudspeth, and welcome to the show. I want to start this podcast out by just throwing a lot of prayers up for the Texas Panhandle, for all the wildfires going on, and I know some of those have crossed over into Oklahoma. So, man, it's just so sad, and it's kind of odd timing because, you know, last week I did the episode about Oklahoma mule deer, and so because I want to go up there and hunt, I've been spending a lot of time on Onyx and Google Earth, you know, looking at that area on both sides of the border, and so it just really, really breaks my heart. You know, I'm as I'm looking through or watching the news and everything, I'm recognizing a lot of the towns and little communities that are being affected by this, and so, yeah, if you or someone you know has been affected by the wildfires, if there's anything we can do, if there's any way I can use this platform to, you know, get the word out or, you know, use it in some way to help, please, please let me know. But yeah, I mean, whether you're a farmer, rancher, just like living out there, hunt out there, all the wildlife, there's just no way that you're probably not going to be affected by these fires if you live out there. So yeah, I just wanted to start out by saying praying for you guys, and please, please let me know if there's anything I can do. So just wanted to get that out there. Man, as far as kind of announcements and stuff going on with me, not a ton. Been very busy lately. Oh, excuse me. This coming weekend, which will have already happened by the time you guys are listening to this, is the Backwoods Show. Been talking about it for a few weeks. And a little wrinkle came up recently in a good way. And I might not be making it out to the show after all. I was talking to my brother and looking at the calendar, and I have so much stuff coming up that I either need to do or want to do. I got some guys coming down from the Sportsman's Empire to go hog hunting. I got the Oklahoma Outdoor Outreach Foundation turkey hunt coming up in a few weeks. I have a Nebraska turkey tag that I would like to get up and use at some point. I need some food plots, or I got to plant some food plots. I really want to try again to plant some switchgrass as a screen around my food plots and stuff. I tried it last year, but I think I've learned from my mistakes. I didn't get a stand at all last year, and I think I planted the seed one too deep, and I think I also planted it too early, and so trying to learn from my mistakes. But all that to say, got a lot going on this spring on top of, you know, a wife and a daughter and a life and everything. But anyway, back to this weekend, I was talking to my brother, and they've been doing a lot of work on a lot of our ponds, you know, tanks and stuff that we use to water our cattle. And currently at the ranch is a nice cabbed D6 dozer. And I don't know how much longer it's going to be there. Like I said, they're using it to work on the ponds and everything. And if you've followed me on Instagram for any amount of time or listened to this podcast, you know that we have an old, I think 1971 old John Deere dozer. It has like one or two windows left. You know, it does okay, but it's not great. But man, the thought of being able to be up at the ranch for a weekend with a nice cat D6 dozer, I just don't know if I can pass that up. Especially with this early spring we've kind of had this year. Like I would love to do some burning if possible, but I mean, I'm losing that opportunity by the day. And so I haven't quite made up my mind, but I'm very strongly considering skipping the Backwoods Show to head out to the ranch and work on that dozer all weekend long. So like I said, not sure. But yeah, if I do end up going, hopefully I, you know, got to meet you guys and shake your hands and introduce myself. If I don't end up getting to going, know that I'm there in spirit. I hope you guys still went, cause it's an awesome show. I mean, I look forward to it every year. But I just, it's not often that I have, you know, a really nice big dozer at my disposal to go and do habitat work with. So I just don't know if I can pass that up. So all that to say, hope you guys made it. Not sure if I made it. What else? I talked about, man, it's coming up on food plot time, coming up on switchgrass time. It's almost past, you know, TSI time, timber stand improvement, but I'm going to go out there, get it done. Still none of my bucks have shed. I got my protein feeders filled and stuff. One thing that I talked about, I think 2 weeks ago, was my theory on the acorns that, you know, basically, you know, I heard from so many people, and I myself had such a weird season just not seeing the amount of deer. And I had heard somewhere that it was like a huge bumper crop of acorns. And I put that out there on the episode 2 weeks ago and had several people message me saying that they had experienced the same thing and that they believe that also. So if you're listening to this, maybe you missed that episode or you've been wondering. Apparently every like 7 to 8 years, oak trees just do this thing where they kind of communicate to each other. And they just produce a crap ton of acorns. And apparently that's what happened this last year. So, that turkey season's almost here. Very excited about that. I think that's about all I have for this intro. So we got a really, really awesome episode this week. We're talking to a guy named Nathan Latimer. And Nathan has transitioned the last couple years into traditional archery. And so y'all know that I've talked about it on here for the last 2 years or so. I've been piddling with a longbow, really enjoying it. So Nathan kind of went through this progression that I feel like a lot of traditional archers go through, where he grew up hunting, he grew up using a compound, he's always been a really hardcore archery hunter. And then one day he just kind of, he killed a nice deer with his bow, and it just didn't quite do it for him. And so he decided to make the transition into traditional archery and has been loving it. And so I'm not quite to that point yet, but I feel like I may be getting closer. After practicing with the longbow a lot and, you know, taking it on some hog hunts, I get the thrill and I get the challenge. So even if you're not a traditional archer or you have no plans to become a traditional archer, this is still a good episode for you because we don't talk a ton about, like, you know, shooting form or anything like that. This episode is really about hunting with traditional archery. So we talk about some of the differences, you know, how you have to get so much closer. And so it's the type of stuff that no matter what you're hunting with, it's still going to be very beneficial. So like I said, awesome episode with Nathan. That's all we got for you guys this week. Really looking forward to it, and I'm going to go ahead and let you guys go, and we will get into the episode right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's show, and today we're talking to Nathan Latimer. How you doing, Nathan?
I'm doing well, John. How about you?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad. It's been a little bit of a crazy day, but you know, it's winding down now, ready to sit here and talk a little hunting, so... Nathan, I'm pretty excited to have you on today. You know, every once in a while I get to do something a little selfish and talk about a topic that I am very interested in. And I don't know how interested everybody will be in this, but we're going to be talking about some traditional bow hunting today. And like I said, I'm pretty excited about it. And I think most people are at least interested in it. And, you know, it's one of those things that even if somebody has no desire to actually hunt with a traditional bow, I think people who do hunt with traditional archery just have to be so much more kind of in tune to everything that you can still learn a lot. And so, like I said, very excited about it. But I feel like I'm getting ahead of myself, so I'm going to back up here a little bit. And why don't you just tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
First and foremost, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. Secondly, I'm a husband to my wife, Danielle. We celebrated 25 years this year. I'm a father to Madison, Zane, and Emily. And I guess next, I'm a builder by trade, contractor, self-employed. And then lastly, I'm a hunter of the ever elusive North American white-tailed deer. I guess awesome. The main thing through my life is keeping those prioritized, keeping them in, mm-hmm. in that order as I named them out. Not always easy, but one I think is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. Well, yeah, like I said at the beginning, I'm super excited to have you on today. And I think just a good way to start this off is let's just kind of talk about your transition into traditional archery. And you and I had a pretty good conversation last week kind of leading up to this, and you kind of told me your story, but just for all the listeners out there, just kind of talk about how you got started hunting and how that transitioned into where you are today.
Yeah, so I moved around a little bit. I grew up from age 6 to 19 in Virginia. My dad was a member of the Isaac Walton league there in Northern Virginia, and he shot bear bow and competed in the NFAA and actually won the national championship 3 years in that class, twice in the open and once in the 50 or 55 and over, I think it is. But so I've been around it my whole life. Of course, you know, when you're young and hunting, you want to kill deer as much as you can, and so you use the weapon that gives you the best percentages. So I mean, I started off compound hunting. I killed my first deer when I was 12, 1988, with old Jennings Fork Lightning, but killed some with gun. We actually lived in a county in Virginia where it was buckshot only. It was a populated county, and so we could use buckshot. But just grew up around it a lot. But then after high school, I moved to Ohio and lived there for 22 years. And so obviously they have a good deer herd there, and was fortunate to take some nice deer. And I don't know, I've always been one that liked to challenge myself. And in 2009, I killed a deer with a gun that I've been hunting for 3 seasons. And in Ohio at that time, you could only use slug gun or black powder, but I shot him at like 20 yards with a gun. And I just, it was one of those things. I was disappointed in myself. I just didn't feel a satisfaction that deer should have given me. And so I promised myself then I'd never shoot, you know, another buck with a gun. And I haven't never even hunted with one, or for one. And so I guess, with the archery equipment, the compounds and such, the way it is, you know, you can be very proficient with one. And through the years, I got to the point where it was kind of getting stale to me. It was just kind of, you know, if you're hunting a rut, you set up on the travel corridor. I mean, eventually one's going to come by. You come to full draw when he's cruising by. You grunt, he stops. You pull the release, and it's over. And it was getting a little stale to me. And I killed some decent deer. Killed a Boone and Crockett deer. And even then, the feeling would be much different than it was, and it just wasn't. And so I dabbled with the traditional gear for about 15 years, but about the last 3 years, I started getting serious about it. And last year, I just totally give my compound, handed it down to my son, and just went full traditional. It just changes everything. It was like starting over again. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of rekindled that, I don't know, that fire again, that love for it. And the challenge is the ultimate. And I shoot a recurve. I've never shot a longbow. My son actually just got one. So I have nothing against him. This recurves are what I'm familiar with. But so that's how I got into it, was I guess just wanting to challenge myself more. And it's definitely the ultimate challenge.
Absolutely, man. I've been piddling with a longbow the last 2 years or so. I've yet to shoot at a deer yet. I've missed a hog, and then this last year I hit a hog pretty good that I wasn't able to recover. I was talking to somebody here on the show probably like 2 years ago, something like that. And they told me that if you really want to get good at traditional archery, you have to get rid of your compound. And I'm not quite there. Like I'm getting close, but I'm not quite there. And it sounds like that was kind of your story as well. But yeah, it's just, you know, this year I was very determined to do quite a bit of hunting with it. But leading up to opening day, I had a really nice 10 point who was coming into one of my setups. And when it came down to it, I grabbed the compound, of course. And so, we'll see what this year holds. It's at my longbow sitting here 2 feet away. I probably need to get either a heavier longbow or a recurve. I'm not sure. After shooting that hog, I'm not sure this one has quite the juice that I need, but, anyway, that's besides the point. So, like I said, so today I want to talk. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, it's not for everybody. For a certain group of people, really embrace a challenge and really want to put the time in. Because like everything, things, fads come and go. And I'm not saying this about you at all, John, but I'm just saying, I think there's some people that's it's getting kind of popular with social media and things. Traditional hunting's kind of picking up some steam, and that's great for the sport. But I hope that people understand the seriousness of it, and that, you know, don't go hunting until you're proficient enough with one. That would be my, you know, caution to everyone. And it's just a whole different game. It really is. It's a lot more mental. Mm-hmm. And so anyway,
yeah, from my,
what that was worth.
Yeah. From my limited experience, you know, with my compound, I've never been like a super awesome, you know, shoot 100 yard compound guy, but I'm good enough to kill a deer, you know, 20, 30 yards. And I can set the compound down for a few months, pick it up and be pretty dang proficient with it. But, like I said, just in the last 2 years, I have found that is definitely not the case with the longbow. If you don't shoot it for a couple months, you're almost back at ground zero. I mean, it's just, you know, there's no sights, so it's all muscle memory. And if you don't use it, you definitely lose it. So that's, again, I'm no expert by any means, but that's what I've found.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound come across like I am either. I'm fairly new myself. As far as there's guys, and I admire them so much that, you know, the handcraft their own, the self bows, they just know so much more about it. And I guess I'm kind of one. I learn the best by trial and error, and so I would rather learn my own self through failure. Like I said, not hunting fish, but just shooting, seeing what works, what don't work for me, rather than just someone set me all up and I'm ready to go from the start. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I like to learn things on my own. So I have, and I said, I don't claim to know everything at all, but I found what works for me. And I shoot a dozen arrows a day at least. Usually when I get out there, it ends up being more like two or three dozen, but you got to shoot. It's mm-hmm. it's totally different when you got a compound with a sight rack and a peep sight and a kisser button and a mechanical release. It's just, you know, it's a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
There's several different methods to shoot. I know we'll get into that later, but you know, there's purely instinctive shooters who, to me, those are the elite. You know, they're just shooting like you would shoot a basketball without, you know. Then there's, you know, your guys that gap shoot. Then you got your guys that walk the string. That's what I do. Just different ways of you know, still having anchor points and a sighting system without an actual sight rack. It's still much different than a compound with sights. But anyway, if you want, to those that are interested in getting into it, just know that to be proficient, it's going to take a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, I do want to touch on that for sure. You know, I think I'm kind of wanting this episode to be mostly hunting, but just to give listeners an idea, and, you know, in case there is somebody who's maybe new to this, I do want to talk about, you know, the bow and stuff a little bit. So just real quickly, just kind of walk us through your particular setup, you know, bow, poundage. You mentioned the different types of releases, kind of what, you know, split finger, three under, all that good stuff. Just kind of walk us through your setup.
Right. All right. So I, up until this year, I was just shooting, I have a bear, grizzly. I think I couldn't even tell you for sure. My dad gave it to me. Pretty sure it's a grizzly, 45 pound. And that's what I'd shot up until this point, but I wanted a little bit more weight but I didn't want to break the bank, especially if I wasn't sure I was going to be able to do it. Cause obviously, you know, there's no let off. You're pulling all of it. And it's cause it was 45 pound bow, but it's actually, that's at 28 inches. I pull 30. So I was actually right at 50, with that bow. And so anyway, I went on the line and bought a cheap bow, and they're out there. Everyone knows it's a Black Hunter, right? And it cost $100. I wanted you to see if I could make that transition, because ultimately I wanted to shoot 60 pounds. And I really don't need to, I know, but I guess there's still that compound side of me that wants a lot of speed, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, and it's a three-piece bow, so I bought a set of limbs that would be, you know, 55 and then 60. And so, because I wanted to transition from the 50 to 55 to 60. And I ended up really liking the bow. And any reviews, you'll get mixed reviews, but really for the money and for a starter bow, I mean, I highly recommend it. I mean, it shot well. I shot a good deer with it this year, performed it really well. Actually killed three deer with it this year. One really nice one, and then a doe, and then a smaller buck the last day of season. But I'm at 55 pounds. So I shoot a method where I shoot all three fingers under. I walk the string down, which I know we're going to keep this about hunting mostly, but just I shoot three under. And what I do, depending on how far the target is where my reference point, where I grip my string. So I'm not up, my fingers aren't up on the bottom of my nock unless I'm shooting that action for me where I anchor. That's 35 yards, which I don't shoot out that far, but So you have marks on your string to help you, your reference points on your string that changes the trajectory of your arrow. So I shoot 3 under. I'm a little on the lighter side. I'm probably about a 560 grain arrow. And I just shoot a Montech 125 grain head, but I've got 100 grain insert. So I'm about 225 on the end. But, you know, and it shoots. I shot that buck this year. All three of my deer, the arrow went completely through. Now, the first two, it hung up on the fletchings going out the other side, but it came out within the first, I don't know, 20 or 30 yards of deer's running off. The last deer, it completely passed through. So it's got a lot of punch to it. But obviously, if you hit a bone of any sort, you're not going to pass through like that, even a rib probably. But anyway, that's what I shoot. Of course, you know, I have beaver balls for silencers and different things, but that's the Vans of a recurve. They're not going nearly as fast, but they aren't very loud either. So you don't get the deer, normally don't get that reaction like you would on a compound because of the noise level. But I shoot mostly, I practice mostly at 20 yards, but I do, I feel comfortable shooting out to 30. I always, if I'm outside of a 6-inch group, then I'm not going to shoot that far. Now, my goal is a 4-inch group, which I usually am. I shoot 6 arrows at a time, and I usually stay in that 4-inch group. For someone starting out, I wouldn't recommend shooting 6 arrows at a time because you're going to get tired, because especially if you pull them in rapid succession. I noticed that even myself, even a lot of times that 5th and 6th arrow is not as accurate as the other, just because, you know, you're getting from being worn out. But yeah, so that's, like I said, I want to get a custom bow made, but I want to try some different bows, different lengths, draw weights, and see what really fits me before I spend the money on that. I do some missionary work, and I've been to the Philippines several times, and I had a good friend there give me a longbow. It was 100% bamboo. And that's very low poundage, but I want to, I already talked to a bow maker, and they're going to use that as like a veneer piece on a custom bow for me. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But I want to wait. Yeah, I want to wait and see. And he passed away during COVID. He was an older gentleman. And so it just a lot to me. So I want to be able to incorporate that into a custom bow at some point. But anyway, so yeah, that's what I'm shooting. And like I said, it's the good thing about traditional hunting is, you know, you can get started relatively cheap. You know, it doesn't cost a lot. I do want to go to a cut on impact head next year. I've already bought some that I'm trying out, just prep. But that's my goal there. But there's so much to think about, and you know, with your arrow spine, the stiffness of your arrow, different things based off of the weight of your arrow, the weight of your broadhead, how much pounds you're shooting, all those things. But that's for another episode. But I just I found what works for me, and I don't know, I can say this: it's brought back the joy of shooting to me, because to me it wasn't fun to go out and shoot. And I know, and not everyone's like this, whatever, but. Cause I was like you, I could go months and never shoot, and I could pick up my compound. It's just like a gun. If it's sighted in, it's sighted in, mm-hmm. You know, and it's not that way. And I shoot a finger tab, you know, there's guys use glove, or tab but whatever, I shoot a tab. And, so I'm trying to think anything else I could mention with my setup, but.
Let me ask you this real quick. Do you have a quiver on your bow, or do you use like a hip quiver?
Question. Yeah, so I use a quiver on my bow, but I guess it's just old habits die hard. I actually have a detachable quiver that I take off in the I like my quiver off where I can lay my bow across my lap. You know, if you're right handed shooter, I would be on the bottom, and I don't want to be laying on my arrows.
Yeah.
I stand up obviously at prime time, but a lot of times, you know, I do a lot of all day sits or majority day sits, you know, in November, especially. I like to get in there about 10 o'clock and set till dark. That's one of the advantages of being self-employed. I work. I don't have any other hobbies. You know, I try to just save it for deer season. For about 15 years of my life, I was really big into coon hunting, running coon hounds competition. We traveled all over the U.S., but that limited some of my deer hunting some. But since I stepped away from that a long time ago, 2000. But so yeah, this is what I do. It's the only hobby I got, and so I try to do it when I can, for sure.
Awesome. Sweet, man. Well, I appreciate you walking us through that. Let's go ahead and transition kind of more into the hunting stuff. And so, I think to start out, I want to talk about just kind of some of your first initial realizations, thoughts. And so, you know, when you first made the switch and you're using only traditional gear, what were some of the main differences that kind of stuck out to you when you started hunting with it?
Well, so the main issue is, and I guess for me, I mean, I know there's guys that are extremely proficient with bows, but with their traditional gear, but you know, when you're first starting off, I mean, because even a six, if you're shooting a 6-inch group at a target, I mean, that's proficient, but we all know that when you get in the woods at shooting at a deer, it's altogether different, you know. So I guess just the first realization is, you know, I'm not going to be shooting probably through as tight as windows, you know, with a compound, you know, you can lace them through some small areas, different things. Everything's magnified as far as even, cause now you got to consider the trajectory of your arrow. Mm-hmm. Cause with a compound shooting dead flat for the most part, you know, out to 30, where if you're shooting a recurve, you're going to have a little arc in it. So you got to think about that, obstructions in the way. You've got to think about, the deer's reaction time. You know, you're not grunting, at least I'm not grunting and stopping a deer with a recurve, unless it would be extremely close shot, just because then you're putting them on alert and you're shooting under 200 feet a second. So those are the kind of things that, and then the biggest one is, you know, you can't hold your bow for very long. You know, you're holding, I mean, two and a half, 3 seconds would be max for me anyway, because then you start creeping in. If you start creeping in, meaning you're letting down a little, just even, you know, just a hair, and then you're changing your poundage, which is changing your arrow placement. It's just a lot to it. You have to draw, pick your spot, release your arrow all simultaneously. It's not like compound hunting where you can, he's going to go through that opening here in about, you know, 10 to 15 seconds. Let me draw now while he's not looking. Let me settle, you know. So that was kind of that, the biggest thing is just, that's one of the main differences is, and then your movement, like you said, cause you can't move until you're ready to shoot. And so, that would probably be the main thing. And then also your stand height is something to think about. And I've always been one that I would hunt high, try to get up to where, I mean, the wind always matters, but it is more advantageous the higher you get. And so I've shot a lot of deer, a lot of steep angles. I mean, the 170-inch deer I shot, I literally shot him 2 steps from the base of my tree, basically straight down. And it went through the top right beside his spine, hit his one shoulder. And, I mean, he literally dropped in his tracks. And so, but you're not going to shoot that shot with a recurve. You can't even bend enough to get a form, you know, and shoot. So shooting from lower elevation, which then especially late season, you know, you got deer, they've come out of gun season, they're a little bit more spooky, all your leaves are off the tree and you're only 14-15 feet up, you know, that's a big one. For sure. So there's a lot of things to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the questions I was going to ask a little later, but since you brought it up, I'll go ahead and ask it now. And I was wondering, cause like I said, just from the limited hunting I've done, it's, you know, traditional bows, they're just so much longer and so much more bulky.
Right.
Do you find yourself hunting from the ground more, or do you still mostly hunt from a tree stand?
So like I said before, old habits die hard. I'm, it's almost like, and this is just me, and I know a lot of guys have a lot of success on the ground, and my hat's off to them, but I have almost like a psychological block that I just feel like I need to be in a tree just from a visibility standpoint, and just different things. But I will say this, I did hunt off the ground once or twice this season, just depending on situation. But no, I still hunt from the stand, but I do, like I said, I do find myself going up not as high. I use the climber a lot. Actually got some other stands that I use that are in that, you know, 12 to 15 range, but not that you couldn't be any higher. I mean, I'm just saying, I just feel like, you know, you want to get that double lung, you know, if you want to get both of them, you can't be super high, you know?
Yeah.
I did buy a ghillie suit when I first got in, because I thought I might, and I haven't. I used it once this year and went home on the ground, which is kind of cool. I have a buddy that's used one for years, and he's always, you know, it definitely gets you ground level. There's nothing like ground level hunting, that's for sure. But just, you know, when you throw in the fact that now I'm on the ground, but I also need, you know, ideally I need him to be at 15 yards, you know.
Yeah.
You're really, I don't know, your percentages are definitely not in your favor. Mm-hmm. But I'd say the biggest thing, I think, for me, because I've been one, and everyone hunts differently or whatever, but I've always been one. I hunt transitionaries during a rut. I mean, when I live in Ohio, especially, I didn't even go out till October 25th. I just waited on the rut, you know, till the bucks started getting up, moving around a little bit, and I'll hunt transition. So almost without fail, I mean, you're getting bucks cruising through, they're coming through moving fast, and you got to be ready up with the bow, grunt, stop, and shoot. Well, now that I'm shooting traditional, I mean, that's almost out. I mean, not that it's not doable, but I'm just saying it's not the best situation. So now I find myself hunting more earlier season, trying to hunt some feeding patterns where I'm hunting a more relaxed deer, you know. And another reason is my son is 15 now, and he's been hunting since he's six. But now that he's going, I can set him up by himself. He's wanting to hunt early season. A lot of time I try to get him a buck or two, or both his, before the rut hits. So just because I don't have a lot of spots for both of us. But anyway, you know, I'm hunting earlier season for that reason, like I said, and to try to just hunt more feeding patterns where you're hunting a more relaxed deer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you don't want to be shooting a slow bow at a, you know, wound right. up deer, for sure. And that was
right. Like, yeah. And a lot of it is that, you know, I still consider myself new to this, and I'm trying to put myself in the best situation to be successful for what I can do right now, you know? And, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. So, you know, you're getting out there, you're trying this new thing. You're much more limited on how far you can shoot, bow speed, movement, all that stuff. Do you feel like it has made you, this might be like a, I don't know, trigger sense for a lot of people, but like a better hunter? You know, I think a lot of, especially, you know, here in Oklahoma where we can use corn feeders and stuff like that. I know a lot of people like to kind of make fun of us and say, oh, that's not hunting or whatever. I hunt feeders still, you know, it's kind of the name of the game a lot of times around here. But when you're using the traditional archery, like, you know, you were talking about feeding patterns earlier, do you feel like you really had to learn more about deer and their behavior in order to be successful?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would like to think that, you know, my first 30 years of hunting that I had that figured out before anyway, you know what I'm saying, but yeah. But it basically, it all boils down to, and like you said, the name of the game is not everyone's hunting 1500 acre leases. You know, I never did. My biggest one track ever hunted was 135 acres, you know, and 65 of that was crop field. So, you know, you just, unless you're hunting an area where they're feeding and bedding on your property, you're limited in what you can do. And so, I think, so you basically, what I'm saying is you got to hunt according to what you got to work with, you know? So I'm not against feeders as far as at all. I mean, we use them. I think it's good to keep inventory. Gives the deer always have something to eat. It's good for youth getting started. I think it's very important that when you take kids out, that they're seeing deer or they're going to get burnt out, you know. Mm-hmm. It's good for them to be able to shoot some deer when they're young, when they're standing still, which feeder makes it good for that. But, you know, personally for me, my son, even so, he wanted to wean off of that. And, you know, the last 2 years he has, and especially when he got transitioned from a crossbow to a vertical bow that he could pull back, you know, when he got like 13. But as far as making a better hunt, I do think you got to think about those things more. Because the fact of the matter is, you do want to be at a closer range, and mm-hmm. you do want to hunting a more relaxed deer. So the fact of the matter is, you got to put yourself in that situation, whatever that takes. You know, whether it does take doing more homework, does it take acquiring more property, or hunting closer to bedding areas to where you're catching them early season as they're coming to feed, you know, rather than, because if you do that, it's a little bit of a risk where mm-hmm. I can wait 2 weeks and he's going to be moving earlier, but he's probably going to be cruising. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's just a lot to think about. And there's no absolutes, obviously. I mean, so many things can happen in any situation, but yeah, like you said, I mean, I don't know if people want to hear you say if you traditional hunter, you got to be better, but I do think you got to be more aware of those type of things, you know, just to put yourself in a position to be successful. Because yeah, I mean, you can get within 20 yards of a deer, a shooter buck especially, mm-hmm. it's difficult enough. But if you got your compound at 20 yards, unless it's just too much brush, you know, you have a good chance at it. Mm-hmm. Where with the recurve, you know, so many things have to go right for you to even get an opportunity to pull your bow back.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, that's the difference. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, there's guys that have been doing this, like the Wenzel brothers, you know, they're the ones I grew up hearing about, you know, they've been shooting traditional and they're very proficient. And to them, it probably doesn't, you know, they wouldn't even probably be even relating to what I'm saying, you know, they're so advanced, but they didn't get there their first 5 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense for sure. There's a big difference getting a deer 15 yards as opposed to 50. So.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also want to say this, everyone hunts for different reasons, and that's fine. And I know, you know, with the prosperity in our country, just especially, you know, we have, I mean, when I was growing up in the 80s, I mean, if you told someone that you was leasing 500 acres and you was planting 50, whatever acres of corn and beans just for deer, that was unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely unheard of. People didn't have that money to spend. It wasn't. And nowadays it's come down to the fact that if you've got money, you can kill big deer
mm-hmm.
because you can grow them and crossbow from a blind with a heater in late season. And so to me, not about just killing the big deer, but it's the experience along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly for me, it's always been about killing the best deer on your property. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
If you can do that, you know, that's all you can do. And that's mm-hmm. been my motto through my hunting career. It's just, you know, yeah, I've always killed the biggest deer, but I've prided myself on routinely killing the biggest deer on our property. Whatever, absolutely. Wherever that was at. And so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something that, I had kind of learned the hard way several years ago. And yeah, I was growing up, I was very influenced by TV. You know, seeing all the South Texas hunts where guys just sit on the edge of a field and kill these giant deer. And that's all I wanted to do. And quickly learned that I, you know, didn't have the, you know, I wasn't in South Texas, and I couldn't just sit on a field edge. And so I definitely grew up in the school of hard knocks. But yeah, when I got to the point, kind of like you were just saying, you know, like for me, usually my goal every year is to either kill the oldest or he, if he's mature, just the biggest buck on my property that I have access to. And if you're doing that, I mean, you can't ask for any more. You know, like if you were to take that person and put them in some spot where you had all these giant deer, then yeah, you'd probably kill them. But you know, if there's not a 200 inch deer, you can't kill a 200 inch deer. So you got to work with what you're given.
That's right. And I've said it for years, but 180 inch deer is harder to find than it is to kill.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's just not that, you know, and it's getting more and more with, as I mentioned before, but I just, you know, I used to, like you, I got caught up in it. When I was younger, all about the inches measuring, you know, and I used to be into that, and I haven't scored a deer in over a decade, probably around a decade. And, I just don't have any interest anymore. Like you, I hunt for age, mature deer. And that totally satisfies me. And that's, I hunt for myself, and that's really it. Yeah. And if someone asked me what's the most important deer, or, you know, in my career, I would always say the next one. Mm-hmm. Cause that's for me, that's what it's, you know?
Yeah.
And one thing I will say with Oklahoma moving out here with the access to, you know, a lot of public land in Ohio, the public land was difficult, overcrowded, different things. Not that it's not out here in places, but the bow only, you know, public land, I think is good, for us. And I really enjoy it. I hunt some private that butts up to public, and I don't know. I like, I wouldn't mind if Oklahoma went to one buck only, you know, I know they do with the guns, but it would help your herd for sure. Mm-hmm. And I guess my understanding is yours have allow three bucks in Oklahoma, and they changed it to two, and it helped the, you know, size of the deer. And so whatever, I'm not advocating anything. I'm just saying I like the way it's set up here. And, you know, I think they're looking out for us as sportsmen, you know, and giving us a good herd to hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a hot topic that we go on for a while, but that's again, is for another episode.
Right.
So. Yeah. You know, we were kind of starting to naturally get into it there, but my next question for you is, kind of just your mindset and how it may have changed when you switched to traditional. We were just talking about like the caliber of buck you're after, like the first year that you went all in on traditional archery, were you maybe willing to shoot a little bit, you know, smaller or younger buck than you might have, or did you stay the same? Do you expect to be less successful because you know it's more challenging? I kind of hear just kind of your thoughts on your mindset when you go hunting now.
Yeah. So I guess, knowing myself, and if you have known me longer, so I'm really, goal oriented, and I'm kind of a, you may say a hard head. Like when I set my mind to something, I don't get swayed from that easily. So I didn't change my goal at all, and that was to kill a mature deer. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now I will say I shot a deer the last day of season that I would not have shot with my compound.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that I shot a doe my first sit of the year, like I don't know, second week October, and then I killed a good buck November, I want to say 11th. And then I went and worked out of state for a couple of weeks, and just the way it worked out, I'm tailing down the last couple of days of season. I haven't killed a buck in 2 months, you know, or a deer. So my goal was to kill that last day of the season was to kill a doe. But the only thing that came by was a younger buck, and so I shot it. Mm-hmm. I felt for me, just with being new in the traditional game, I needed to end on a positive note with putting an arrow through a deer.
Mm-hmm.
Since that had been so yeah, I guess my mindset did change in that regard. But I wouldn't have shot that deer on November 11th.
Yeah.
You know, matter of fact, I'd passed that same deer earlier in the season, a very, you know, makeable shot. So, but no, I mean, it hasn't for me, but maybe it should. Cause I'm a firm believer in this, that you need whether you're new to hunting in general, whether you're new to bow hunting or traditional hunting, you got to get reps in, live reps. Yeah, it may not feel the same on that 110-inch buck as it did on that 160, but until you prove to yourself that you can shoot that 110 and be successful, it's going to be hard on the bigger one. And to quote one of my buddies, he said this, and I've always appreciated it, but he's a pure instinctive traditional shooter, and he's missed his share of deer. And he always, his saying is, there's a lot of air around him. And if you think of, there's a lot more air around him to miss than there is to hit. But so I think it's fine to change your mindset, you know, and like you said, I was just fortunate to be successful early on a good deer. But I don't think I'll change. You know, I just, that's just me. You know, and I think I told you this when we talked earlier, but you know, the third to the last day of season, I missed a really good deer. Mm-hmm. It was 0 degrees. If you remember, it was a Saturday. Yeah. It was January 13th. It was 0 degrees. I get -5 with the wind chill. I'd been out since 3 o'clock, and it was just right before 6, right. Literally last 2 or 3 minutes of legal light. And just, I'd already had tried to get on another deer for a while. I had my hands out in the elements. You know, you're not shooting with big bulky gloves when you're shooting traditional. And anyway, I froze up, my hands were freezing, and this big buck came in, and I rushed everything, and I shot him for 20, and he was at 25, and I knew he was at 25, but mentally it just, in the moment, I just, you know, I miscalculated and I shot right under him. Yeah. My brother asked me, he said, man, do you regret not having your compound? And I can honestly say I don't, because I know I could have killed that deer very easily and it wouldn't have satisfied me. Mm. So I don't regret it. You know, that's just me. But
yeah, that's, man, it, you know, that's, like you said, once you kind of set your mind on something, nothing else is going to satisfy. That does bring up another good point, though. You know, you're talking about being out there in the freezing conditions, which I had already tagged out. I would have been out there also. But when it comes to conditioning, like cold is one thing, but I'm talking more, you know, on a regular, something you might see more regularly. If it's super windy or maybe it's raining, is that something that might hinder you from going out with your traditional bow that maybe wouldn't with your compound, or are you just going to make the, you know, appropriate adjustment?
Yeah, with the rain, obviously shooting real feathers, you know, the rain affects them like it doesn't, you know, plastic veins. So that's something to think about. Not that you can't shoot it at all. You shoot it, practicing wet and see what it does, you know, stay your equipment. Performs under those conditions. But yeah, and obviously wind would definitely, you know, definitely play a factor. It's definitely going to affect an arrow going 175 feet a second versus 325 or whatever, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
That's definitely something to consider. And like I said, the cold, I said, we don't get a lot of that here, but when I was in Ohio, you know, we routinely hunted, you know, in 0 degree temperatures. Of course, I was hunting compound then. It's a little different, a little bit easier, but as far as, you know, wearing gloves and just, you know, so yeah, the weather can definitely play a factor. And like you mentioned earlier, but just the length of the bow, you know, I use a climber a lot. And so you've always got that upper part of the stand to worry about. And, you know, if you're shooting off one side behind your tree and then and the deer crosses the other side and you got to get around, you know, you're not handling a 31 axle to axle bow. You got sometimes 64 inches, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's there's really not any element of it that's the same.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's still bow hunting. Just about every element of it is different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just yeah. Something to think about.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Man, we're kind of coming up on time. I don't want to keep you here all night, but this is kind of I thought this was maybe an interesting question. We'll see what you think, but let's say for whatever reason, you know, they said it was unethical or whatever, and they banned traditional archery. You're no longer allowed to hunt with traditional archery. You're forced to go back to a compound bow. What are some of the lessons that you've learned from the traditional side that you think would carry over and make you a better compound hunter?
Well, for one, if they did that, I still wouldn't put sights on my bow.
Mm-hmm.
And I would still think I would try to make it as challenging as possible.
Gotcha.
For me. Uh-huh. But I don't know. That is an interesting question. I don't know. Cause I mean, obviously if I did what I just said there, as far as not having sights and things, I still wouldn't have the range that I had before. And so mm-hmm. I would still have to hunt that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think so. Obviously stand placement obviously is always key. Okay.
Yeah.
But with traditional archery versus compound, it's even amplified even more. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, with a compound, you know, you could put yourself in a situation where, okay, I think this is my ideal shot here, but I'm not 100% sure. He could be coming out there at 40, but I can still cover both spots. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where with a recurve, oh, you got to be in the right spot.
Yeah.
And so I think that would stand even as much as what side of the tree your stand is on, so that you're lower now. Remember, you're lower in the so that your body is blocked. Because like I said, as I said this earlier, but when you're hunting late season and leaves are off, if you're protruding out the sides of a tree, they're busting you from 50 yards.
Yeah.
You know, so it's as much as being on the right side of the tree where you're not skylined, you're not sticking out, but yet you're still in a position that when they clear that tree, you can shoot, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think one of the biggest I would probably take from that, if I had to go back to compound, would be those little things like that. Mm-hmm. And placement stand, even like I said, even placement on the tree, you know, and probably I think a lot of you would probably have benefits from it that you didn't even know, you know. Yeah. I think you'd probably find yourself with shorter shots just mm-hmm. because of the stand placement, because of maybe being more patient, because you had to be before, where now you would be just instinctively. Yeah, but I hope they never ban traditional hunting.
I feel like if anything, it'd be the other way around. I was just trying to get you in the right mindset there. So, one thing you've mentioned several times is, you know, stand height. And this last year, I actually drew a very coveted Iowa bow tag, and I mean the prime of the prime. Ended up striking out, but I was even fortunate enough to hunt some private land with a guy that I had met. But one thing I noticed about his stands is they were incredibly high, like scary high. And I brought my own stand and a saddle. You know, I was bouncing around a lot, and so I was hanging my own sets, but every once in a while I'd hunt one of his sets. But I definitely had my safety harness on at all times. But man, I don't know if it was just the Midwest deer or maybe they knew where some of those stands were already. But I swear those deer just walked around looking up, like they knew.
Yeah.
They knew that something was going to come falling down from the sky. But I've never really felt that way here in Oklahoma. Sure, you know, if you make some movement or, you know, noise or whatever, like they're going to look up and they'll see you. I've definitely been spotted before.
Sure.
But I feel like maybe, I don't know if it's because of the population or what, but I feel like they're not quite as on to, you know, tree stands down here. So I don't know. Just, I guess what I'm trying to say is I agree that maybe you don't need to be quite as high as a lot of people think you have to.
Right. Yeah, I know when I was younger, I mean, I'd get up in the air and not looking back, I think that was crazy. But I don't feel, I think that's from just pressure deer, you know. I hunted Pike County, Illinois in early 2000s when it was the height 3 years in a row. And it was one of those things. I mean, it seemed to be the same way there. They were onto that. They were hunted, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think Oklahoma, I think we have a good thing going here. And I of course there's always the out of state versus, you know, resident hunters going on. And I understand, the frustration some people are voicing about out of state, but I've went hunted out of state. So I don't know how it can act out, but yeah. I'll let the ones that deal with that deal with it. But, mm-hmm. You know, I do enjoy it. I do want it to see it preserved, you know, and I guess, I want to say that everybody hunts for different reasons. I said that before, and as long as it's legal, I'm fine with it. You mm-hmm. know, I do think it's healthy to keep everything's got to stay in its place. So you read sometimes it kind of disturbs me a little bit. Sometimes you read article, people get possessed with a certain deer and they just, it almost, you know, you've heard of stories. It wrecks families, it ruins marriages. And it's not, no deer's worth that. You know, yeah. I do want to say, you know, as much as I enjoy it, as much as the time I spend doing it, you know, I would never jeopardize any of, you know, life's blessings over a deer.
Yeah.
You know, we're a family that we don't buy beef. We eat venison. We between me and my son, we try to kill eight deer a year at least. That gets us through a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we enjoy it. It's a good resource. It's healthier. And as I always say, it's a lot funner to shop for.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do. And we enjoy it. And the traditional part of it has kind of just rekindled that love for shooting. And I've always loved to hunt, but just the preparation, you know, that was had kind of gotten stale and stagnant with the compound, but it's rekindled that for me. And I tell you, I'm just really enjoying it.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Well, I think that's a great way to wrap this up. Man, Nathan, I can't thank you enough for coming on and joining us today. Good luck to you in this upcoming season. I hope you keep shooting the traditional bow. You've definitely encouraged me to get out here with mine. I need to figure out if I'm going to get a heavier bow or not. But yeah, man, like I said, can't thank you enough. And I really appreciate you coming on today.
No problem. I've certainly enjoyed it. And good luck to you and all other hunters out there.
Thank you, Nathan, for coming on and talking about your transition into traditional archery. Like I said during the episode, I got my longbow sitting here. I can almost touch it from where I'm sitting. Really, really excited to get out there and practice with it. Done a little hog hunting with it, but I know I've said this for like 2 years in a row, but I really, really want to get out there and do some deer hunting with it, even if it's just a doe. Man, it just seems so awesome, and it seems like it would be such an accomplishment to get out there and just take a deer with traditional equipment. So yeah, that's an encouragement to you all. Get out there, practice. Even if you're not going to hunt with traditional archery, be practicing with your bow. Don't make the mistake of setting it down and not touching it for the next 4 months and then trying to pick it up in September and go hunting. Get out there, shoot your bow, shoot your gun, shoot your muzzleloader, whatever you're going to be hunting with, get out there and practice with it. Beautiful time of year to be out there. Man, it's almost fishing time. It's we're kind of getting towards the end of like varmint season. Spring is almost here. Like it's pretty darn warm out there right now. So man, just get out there, enjoy God's creation. Thank you for listening to this show. And until next week, I will see y'all right back here on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.